quality ghostwriting relationship produces is really marrying writing skill and editorial expertise with somebody's expertise in story. So if you think about it, writers spend a large portion of their lives developing their craft. And often we are partnering with people who spent their whole lives developing another skill. That marriage of those two expertise is so profound and so powerful. And a lot of times it doesn't necessarily make a lot of sense for this person who's a renowned scientist to learn how to write and then learn how to write a book. It just makes so much more sense to collaborate and create something that's bigger than either of you could have ever created on your own. Welcome to Beyond Better, a podcast that explores a simple but profound idea. We all deserve to live lives we love, and that includes our work lives too. I'm Stacey Ennis, an author and longtime location-independent entrepreneur living in Portugal with my family of four. Join me as I talk business, location independence, writing, travel, and so much more, all focused on building a life that is beyond better. Welcome, welcome. I'm so excited to be here with you this week. This is going to be a short and sweet Ask Stacey episode. I love getting your questions. I get so many questions every single week from you asking about writing, publishing, marketing, author platform, location independence, Portugal, all the things. And this week, I'm going to be answering questions specifically about book writing. So I'm really excited to dive into those. Before I do, I want to read a podcast review this week. This one comes from Santija. Santija says, highly recommend. Stacey does an amazing job hosting the podcast. Her personal experience and the unique insight the guests bring make the Beyond Better podcast a worthwhile listen. So thank you so much, Santija. I really appreciate you taking the time to leave that review. And a fun fact, I just discovered this one, even though it was posted last year, because I learned that Apple Podcast has different review sites for different regions. I don't know if it's different countries or different regions. So I discovered some new ones recently on different versions of Apple Podcast. So I was really excited to find this one. If you are a longtime listener, if you get value from the work that I do, would you please take a moment to leave a hopefully 5-star review and write a little description of what you love about the show, whether it's Apple or Spotify or anywhere you listen to your podcast. I really, really appreciate your time. Helps me reach more people, support more people on their author and location independent journeys. So let me hop right over into the questions this week. I have 3 of them, and they're such good questions. I feel like they represent so well a lot of the questions that I get on a regular basis by email, by social DM, from colleagues and friends, from clients. So I'm going to jump right into the first question. This question comes from Lindsay, and Lindsay writes, when I wrote my book, she's referencing her first book, it was though a lightning strike hit and the book poured out of me. I've been toying with the idea of another book, but this certainly isn't the same experience. I was wondering if you have any insight as to whether I should have a clear idea for my book first, so doing the work of creating a life worth writing about first, or if writing for the sake of writing is, quote, worth it, in the hopes that an idea comes out. She says, I'm sure you have a podcast topic on this, so if it's easier to point me in that direction, point away. And certainly I have talked about writing for the sake of writing many times, but I don't think I've spoken directly about this exact thing. So Lindsay, thank you so much for that great question. You had me thinking as I read this and kind of digested it and got my notes together to respond today about all of the uncertainty that we as aspiring authors or repeat authors bring to book projects. And especially if you had that experience of, you know, first book just came like bing, bang, boom, it's here. I have clarity. I know what I want to write. The writing comes smoothly. And then you start to have that little whisper inside that's like, ah, I want to write another book. You don't have that clarity. That can be confusing, right? Because you had one experience this time and now you're having a totally different experience. And it's funny because just as I was talking about this, it made me think about when I had both of my kids and also like who they've become. Same general process, very different experience, very different people, right? So it's really not that much different in theory or like in comparison, but definitely hopefully not as painful when it comes to writing a book. Writing a book and how you kind of come to that awareness for that book can happen a number of different ways. Some of us have that clarity quickly. We know exactly the book we want to write. We are able to sit down and outline it. We have a good idea of the structure. Maybe we need a little support to make sure that the book is really structurally sound, but we're able to just come to it and we have that clarity. Much more often, the book is very fuzzy. And there might be 10 books or 5 books or 3 books that you could write, or like different iterations of the same book. So it could be a book, that same topic, but to this audience, to a wider audience. And so that fuzziness is very, very, very normal. Lindsay, because you experienced this like lightning bolt in your first book, I can understand why it's feeling strange to not have that this time. But I want to assure you, and I want to assure all listeners and all viewers, that it is 100% normal to go into your book writing project or want to write a book and just feel super fuzzy and unclear. So normal, totally normal. Okay, so now what do you actually do about that? So I want to talk first about that idea of writing for writing's sake, and then I'm going to talk about the process that I use to help authors develop clarity about their book ideas. So first, writing for writing's sake. Writing for writing's sake, yes, I 100% believe in that. And I think it's such an important thing to do if you truly want to develop as a writer. Writing for writing's sake means that you are simply writing for the sole purpose of writing, not necessarily to share, but just simply to create that piece of art. The equivalent that I could give to it would be maybe painting a painting, my goodness, that you go and like immediately paint over and redo. And writing in that same sense would be writing something and feeling okay with lighting it on fire, ripping it up, and nobody ever seeing it, but simply going through that act of writing. 100% believe in that. And maybe you don't burn it or rip it, but maybe it lives in a journal with no intention to share that. To me, that is what I think of when I think of writing for writing's sake. I think what you're getting at, Lindsay, is writing without a clear, bigger project or purpose. And I want to validate that too. And in fact, I think that is hugely, hugely important, because especially if you're feeling a lack of clarity around the book that you want to write, creating content, writing emails to your email list if you have one, or even thoughtful posts on LinkedIn or Instagram or whatever social platform you're on, or blog posts, or even recording podcasts like this. All of those are ways that we process our ideas. They're ways that we sharpen our ideas. They're ways that we develop clear language, that we get to understand what resonates with people and what doesn't resonate with them. So it's very, very important that outside of the scope of this one book project that you can wrap your arms around, you also are creating to learn. Maybe that's the way that I would frame it. It's create to learn. You create to learn about yourself and your own ideas and your own perspectives and how you want to shape those and share those. And then you're creating to learn about others, what resonates with them, who is resonating with this. Maybe there's a whole audience that you didn't even think about that's like, yeah, they really are on board with it. So there is that piece of it of really sharing to learn. That does require you to share outward and to put your ideas out there and to publish. For me, and if you're on video, you see me looking over, I am a note taker and I am accessing my notes over here. So for me, I don't journal as much anymore as I used to. I go through little phases with journaling where I will journal for a period of time, and but it's really not been a habit that has stuck with me on a daily basis since I was, you know, when I was a kid, I used to do it a lot, but as an adult, not so much. And I think a lot of that is because I write every day pretty much in some capacity. But I tend to publish most of what I write. I share that. I think, you know, in the earlier period of my writing, I did a lot of writing for writing's sake, not writing to learn. It was more writing to discover myself and grow as a writer. And I think at some point I kind of got to a place where, you know, I really want to share and grow and learn and impact people with the work that I do. And so for me, like, that's pretty much the phase that I've been in for a long time. I do really suggest that you make some kind of practice on a regular basis to really learn, to really grow, to really uncover your ideas and build that clarity, both around what you want to say and how you want to say it, and around what this actual book is going to be. So on the practical piece of that, that would be either a daily journaling habit if you're really in that writing for writing's sake stage, or that would be a regular publishing habit if you're in that writing to learn stage. And maybe you're doing both. In fact, as I say this, I'm like, I really should, integrate journaling into my life again. I have been doing morning meditation, but I think even a 5-minute journaling activity is such a beautiful way to kind of ease into the day and an anchor. So yeah, good. Note to self. Okay. The other thing that I want to talk about here is, okay, great. I'm going to write and learn and discover my voice and my ideas and clarity, yada, yada. Great. How do I actually clarify this particular book? Like, how do I uncover this book? A lot of times when I'm helping authors outline their books, the question that I'm asking is, what is the right book for right now for the right person? And the person is representative of a larger group. Because in the coaching and work that I do, where I am specifically working with people who are writing nonfiction as part of a bigger vision, it's really important to think about where that book fits in the sequence of that vision. And most of the authors that I get the honor of working with, whether through one-on-one coaching or through ghostwriting with my team or through my program, Nonfiction Book School, they have this big vision and I can instantly see 5 books in them. I can see that they have this opportunity to write so many, so many books. And it's really amazing to me that many will, after finishing their first book, they'll come back and say, oh, I think I'm ready for the next book. So there is often an opportunity for many books. And I encourage you to remain open to that. Yes, you, Lindsay, you already are, but also to other readers and listeners that are exploring this for themselves or even thinking about their first book. So I'm trying to uncover that question of what's that right book right now? Understanding that I may have others open up and come up in the future in my journey toward that big vision of impact. And then what I do is I coach them through a method of organizing their ideas. I use a sticky note method. I love this method. It's so effective, so fun, and it really helps you sort through your ideas. I also walk through, actually before that, we do some visualization. I have some questions that you write on, and then you go through the sticky note activity, and it helps you put your ideas into kind of themes or buckets. And what many people will find is they have a few books that they could write, and then it's picking like, what is that right book for right now? And then leaning into that. The only way that you find that clarity is through intentional exploration. Waiting for the lightning bolt probably will not be a fruitful endeavor. For most people, you really need to do that intentional work to really dive into uncover this book and understand what this book idea is and who your reader is and what this core message is for the book and how you're going to structure it, all of that. I have a self-study program that you can find at nonfictionbookschool.com that can guide you through this over 10 weeks. And really, this is exactly what I teach in my one-on-one coaching. Of course, we wouldn't get the joy of getting to collaborate together, but certainly you have this world-class education that I have built and curated specifically for you to help you be successful. So for anybody who's like, I'm stuck, I don't know what to do, my self-study program could be exactly what you need to help you navigate through this. Last thing I'll say to you, Lindsay, as you're thinking through this, and to listeners, viewers, is really asking that question, going back to how does this book fit into my bigger vision? Like, how is this book a catalyst for me to reach that big vision of impact, that thing I want to do? Anchor to that. That's a really important question. And perhaps you're listening to this and you're like, I don't know what that big vision is. Start there. I have on my website, stacyennis.com/resources. We'll be sure to drop that in the show notes. You can get a life visioning guide. So I would, if you don't know that, start with that and then move into clarifying that book idea, perhaps utilizing my nonfiction book school self-study program or another method to clarify your ideas. And then also, if you are feeling the call to write, please heed that call. It's so important. It is such a meaningful calling to have. So I hope that you lean into that, Lindsay, and anybody else who is listening, watching right now. So thank you so much for that question. We're going to move to the next question now. And this question comes from Yasir. Yasir says, I have a goal to write a book, but I'm new to writing. I have disciplined myself to write about my experience of my self-discipline journey. I write on Substack. I have an important question to ask you. If I like the idea or concept from a book, how do I quote it in my writing with attribution? Or how do I cite it? Such a good question. Yes, Sierra, congrats on taking these first steps toward writing your book. I know even emailing me is a step toward that. And so I hope you're feeling really motivated and driven and continuing forward with the momentum that you have around your book. Okay, let me answer your question. I've got a bunch of notes on this. So first of all, I wanted to tell you that, like, I love when new authors are pursuing writing. And really, I would even say not even necessarily new authors, new writers. I love welcoming people into this world of writing. It's such a beautiful place. There's so many kind people. There's so much to learn. There's so much support. And so if you're new to writing, like Yasir, just know that this is such a warm and welcoming world and that very likely you'll find some great people to support you along your journey. And I want to commend you, Yasir, for already writing on Substack. It looks like you're doing a good job building your platform. I would definitely lean into that even more and really focus on building up your platform, continuing to develop your writing skills. At that same URL I mentioned earlier, stacyennis.com/resources, I have an author platform guide that will be super helpful for you. On attribution and copyright and citation and all things legal word stuff, I did a really, really great interview with Brad Fraser. I think it was about a year ago. He's an attorney and we had such a good discussion about all of those things. So I'm going to be sure to link to that in the show notes. Such a smart discussion and so many great legal pointers. Plus his story is super fascinating. So I highly recommend that you go and listen to that episode. So I will say for myself, I tend to go a little overboard with citations. I think this comes from having a background in academia. I have a graduate degree in writing and just even my bachelor's in writing. We were really like, it was like drilled into us that you cite everything, you give attribution for everything. And so I tend to probably oversight my stuff simply for that reason. Interestingly, in the episode with Brad, he advises the opposite. So please take that with a grain of salt. I also worked at a scientific journal and I did science writing for a long time. And when you do science and medical writing, like I did for so long, you really do need to cite every single study that you reference because people want to dive into that and they need to be able to find that information. So I think it's like pulled from that work into the work I do today. My personal rule of thumb, I am not an attorney, so please take this disclaimer that this is definitely nothing I say here is legal advice. But I'll tell you what my rule of thumb is based on things that I've read and learned over the years, is that I don't quote any more than 50 words. But generally I don't even do that. It's kind of risky to quote anything. And so when I do quote, I keep it very short. And usually it's like a sentence or it's part of a sentence or a phrase that I feel like is especially well written that I really want to capture. I'm also going to drop a couple of resources into the show notes for you. So when you're citing any sort of material in your book, you really need to make sure that anything that is directly pulled is in quotation marks. So if it's a direct quote, it needs to be quoted in quotation marks. Again, the legal bubble around that, I would recommend that you do some additional research and also listen to the episode with Brad. So there's that, but then you need to think about as well paraphrasing. That's another way that we reference material. So paraphrasing means you take a big chunk of text and you put it in your own words. And then also thinking about rephrasing. So when you paraphrase, you're kind of summarizing a big thing into a smaller thing. And when you're rephrasing, you're writing something in a different way. And typically both of those would still need to be cited following academic standards, because academic standards require everything to be cited. But again, when I did the episode with Brad, he had very different thoughts on that. And he's an attorney and I'm not. So I highly recommend that you go and listen to that. In the show notes, I'm going to link to an article that I found from Yale that talks about understanding plagiarism. Again, this is for undergraduates, so you know, you have to really realize that in this world of publishing, we don't have a lot of great standards on what it means to copy somebody else's work and when we should cite it. And while there are laws on this, it's really open to interpretation. And it can get a little dicey if you quote somebody that doesn't want to be quoted, or you paraphrase something in a way that, you know, doesn't align with what it actually meant. So you do need to be careful about the way that you're referencing other people's work. But as an author myself, I personally always expect to be quoted or attributed to my own work. So if somebody references my book or my online content or my emails, anything, I expect to be referenced, right? And I'm sure that you feel the same way. So that's kind of the guiding principle that I use, is almost like do unto others. And if I truly derive something from someone else's work, I should really give them credit for it. That's the way that I think about it. Again, not as an attorney. When I am referencing, sometimes I will directly mention them in the text. Sometimes I will just include an endnote. I use Microsoft Word. It's like you go to the top, insert, and then you can go to endnotes and footnotes, and then you can go to endnote, and it'll automatically drop endnotes into the end of your draft. This is so handy. As I'm writing, I just add in URLs, and then later I go back and fill in the details. I found a great citations creator that I'm going to drop into the show notes. This is from Grammarly. I find these to be super helpful, but they're not always 100% accurate. So just keep in mind that you may need to tweak it a little bit. And when you are creating citations, always use Chicago Manual of Style. You can learn more at chicagomanualofstyle.org. That's almost universally true, except sometimes in science and medical writing, they'll use a different standard, but typically almost all book publishing is Chicago Manual of Style. So I hope that is helpful. There's so much to say about this, and we already talked about a lot of this in the episode with Brad, so I hope you find that very, very helpful. Our next question comes from Liverton, and Liverton asks, just out of curiosity, is ghostwriting legal? And when you do it, do you earn royalties on the sales, or do you get a one-off payment? Which is preferable? Such a good question. It's funny. I get this question a lot, and it's from both people who are interested in becoming ghostwriters and people who are just like curious, how does that work? So first of all, ghostwriting is legal. Yes, don't worry, it's 100% legal. It's really no different than hiring a designer for your house or for your website or hiring an attorney. It is a service that you hire somebody to do. Ghostwriting, I think, has it's misunderstood. So a lot of times people are like, oh, a ghostwriter came in and just wrote their book for them. Yeah, kind of. But what that ghostwriter, what a quality ghostwriting relationship produces is really marrying writing skill and editorial expertise with somebody's expertise and story. So if you think about it, writers spend a large portion of their lives developing their craft. For me, I started honing my craft really at age 7. I feel like I can really put like a stake in the ground and say I started at age 7 because I started writing. I submitted my first piece for publication when I was 7. From there, I started studying writing. I devoured books. I took every extra writing class I could once I got old enough to take those. I did everything I could to develop my skill. I went on to get a degree in writing and a master's degree in writing and write a bunch of books and coach authors and all this stuff. So for me, for the ghostwriter, Robin Bethel, on my team, for other ghostwriters, like, we spend our whole lives developing this skill. And often we are partnering with people who spent their whole lives developing another skill. And like a surgeon, for example, or a tech founder, or an expert in real estate. I don't know. I'm just picking random things. But really, that marriage of those two expertise is so profound and so powerful. And a lot of times it doesn't necessarily make a lot of sense for this person who's a renowned scientist to learn how to write and then learn how to write a book. It just makes so much more sense to collaborate and create something that's bigger than either of you could have ever created on your own. So it's such a beautiful thing, and it's such a great option for people who really don't have the time or interest to develop the skill of book writing, and they really want to work with somebody, and they want to be efficient, and they want to really like bring in the best to support them. It's such a great option. On the topic of how we get paid, that varies a lot. Some ghostwriters will get a big project fee. Others will have some kind of a partnership, which includes royalties. And then some will come in at a collaborative level, so their name will be on the cover, and they might be doing some sort of fee and some sort of revenue share. Or maybe their name's not in the cover, but they are doing both. So they have that fee and the revenue share, royalties, I should say. For me and my team, we have almost universally stuck to a flat fee. In the past, I tried some revenue share flat fee combos. They didn't exactly work out the way I was hoping. And I find that it's just a lot more clear cut when we have a flat fee. Everybody knows what's expected and we have a clear timeline. And then there's not necessarily an ongoing financial relationship. We can just cleanly say, okay, here you go. Here's the work for hire. It's yours. And you can do with it what you want. We don't have any claim to it. In the past, I think why the royalty share, didn't necessarily work out is because a lot of our clients, they have other ways that they make their money back on their projects. And book sales is one piece of it. But for them, it's much more about their business growth, speaking engagements, you know, all of those other things that come. And there is really no clear way to measure that and to work that out probably there is a way to do it, but I think that would get a little bit confusing and a little dicey. So we have never done it that way. I have tried the flat fee and revenue share. And like I said, it didn't really work out the way I was hoping. So now we do a flat fee. And I find it works really well. And again, it's really clear. Everybody knows the expectations going in, and you really can just set out the project with really clear parameters of what's expected, what the investment's going to be, all of that. Thank you so much for that great question, Liverton. I loved getting to talk a little bit about the inner workings of ghostwriting. It's not something that I always get the opportunity to talk about and share some behind the scenes. So I really enjoyed getting to share more with you today. Thank you for these questions. You can send in your questions by going to stacyennis.com and filling out the form on my website under contact, or you can email me at hello@stacyennis.com. I'm getting a good rhythm with these, so if you send a question, chances are I'll answer it in a relatively timely manner. And I love these because other people are wondering these too, and these episodes are very popular. People love to hear the questions and the answers. So do send in your questions if you have them, and I will do my best to answer them on an upcoming episode. Thank you so much for joining me. I have to give a special shout out this week to Rita Dominguez, who edits this episode. She is our producer and all things making this podcast work. And also special thanks to Catherine Fishman for her support in project management, communicating with guests. She's such an important part of this show. And then also to Kim Foster, who supports on making sure all of the written content that comes out in relation to the podcast, including social media, podcast descriptions, and all of that, it's clean and error-free and useful for you as a listener and viewer. Thank you for your time and energy today. I will be back with you before you know it. You can always access show notes, including any links mentioned in this episode, at stacyennis.com/podcast. And you can connect with me at stacyennis.com, on Instagram at stacyennis, or on Facebook at stacyenniscreative. Thank you so much for joining me this week. Here's to building lives that are beyond better.